And now we come to the lecture, the second lecture given on the same day of the 29th of July 1921. Rudolf Steiner starts by indicating, he said, when in recent years I was placed with the task of leading the Dornach building, so there all resonated in myself a sentence in my ears which I heard expressed when I studied in Vienna in the technical high school. And during the time when the during this time the builder of the Viennese votive church, the well-known architect Ferstall, presented the entered the rectorship. He was the rector of this high school, and he gave his rectorate speech about the history of architecture. And during this speech, he made a sentence that again and again, and especially as a practical task, entered into me, and it clung in my, resounded in my ears. Ferstall said in the course of his speech something like this: styles of architecture cannot be invented. They must surface up out of the underground of the folk, of the folk aspect. As it were, Ferstall explained out of this view the fact that the modern age in relationship to the style of architecture can be less productive, because the soul of the folk less carries to the surface in the style. And in other words, the folk aspect doesn't manifest itself in the style, and you get much more a reproduction insofar as people go back to the antiquity, to the Gothic, to the Gothic, to the Roman style, to the style of the Renaissance. Now you have to admit that in reference to the practical tasks, such a view is extraordinarily discouraging. Now, as you know, Herr Strakosch, in the course of his distinguished lectures, made a very important remark, which, so to say, talked with great proof of this discouraging aspect. Because he said precisely in the beginning of his lecture, he said, and he quote, "About style, you can say nothing. About style, much has been thought, much has been discussed. To be sure, it does not, what matters not is that you form a conclusive judgment about the style, because in a certain sense you lack the preconditions for this conclusive judgment. When you hear something like that, then you must think, precisely when you're confronted with practical tasks, something like this. What matters is the style. It matters that you cannot form a conclusive judgment. And in particular, when for a modern spiritual stream you are called upon to create a framework, as in the case with the Dornach building, then the important point is the looking for a style. But still another note, another remark is just as well adapted to be strongly proving in this, in reference to the indicated practical task. Now, a large proportion of the Dornach building had to be built out of the relationships in concrete, and the concrete understructure goes to a certain height, and it had to be crowned by the actual building, which was a wooden building. Now, in the case of a wooden building, you will also have to admit that out of the materials, the forms are given in a strong way, a strict way. In the case of a wooden building, that gives of itself what must arise out of the interworking of requirement, goal, and the feeling for material. Thus, in connection with Dornach, you had to put together a quite definite world of the style with something of which one has to say that you can do what you want with it. As far as concrete, you can make the most strange things with concrete. Whereas wood is much more definite. The wood determines very much what you do, but with concrete, you can do anything you like with concrete. However, if you're not predisposed to make the most ridiculous things, so in reference to concrete, you have another feeling. And there I must already say that I must produce the most different judgment out of the practice than that which most usually is done with concrete. If you take together what you have as antecedents for the style of building, then actually you can really do nothing, build nothing out of the concrete. You can, as it were, build anything, but you can in the main build nothing. Make bloody sense out of that sentence if you can. Okay, let's continue. Since one has a conscience of style, so naturally you can't start off by saying, yeah, I can do anything I like. You can only begin something when out of a certain style conscience you use concrete as a material. After all, this sort of fun is simply saying that many people think you can do what you like with concrete. But when you have a really a style conscience, then you can't say, I can do anything. That's all he's saying. Continue. Sandy continues, one is indeed in a certain connection, in a parallel situation with that which otherwise also, at the present time, precisely, you many times figure on anthroposophical ground. You see, out of the misunderstood undergrounds of mystical sinking in, which many people have when they speak of mysticism, theosophy, and anthroposophy, if you're a mystic, you can do anything you like to do. You can make the most twisted nonsense. But anthroposophy doesn't do that. It doesn't want to make the twisted nonsense. So one, as said, you are in a parallel position. On the one side, you can work like a modern mystic and make the most confused nonsense. And then you'd build a building, then you'd make a building which would have to justify itself for the most strictest science. But on the other side, you can take the most modern material, concrete, with which you can do the most twisted nonsense, but nevertheless, you cannot do it with a style conscience. After saying what people do or confuse and all that bloody nonsense, after getting all that stuff out of himself, now he says the following. Now I point to you very expressly. If one works practically in the configuration of a style, so you are not helped at all by an historical consideration. Everything which there has to be made must proceed out of the most naive aspect, thus must perceive out of a creative aspect. You can do nothing else if you, in a certain way, you practically must lean against such a perception as Verstall manifested when he says, styles of architecture cannot be discovered, they must proceed out of the underground of the folk aspect. One must simply arrive to the perception with a certain conscience of style and say, out of a certain reality, out of a reality you must create an architectural style. You just don't invent a style out of the blue. It must be done, created out of reality. Now, I would like to bring to attention a third thing, which also Herr Strakosch presented. He, Herr Strakosch, pointed to the Gothic, and quite correctly he showed how the Gothic strongly works itself out of the Handwerklichen. That means out of the craft, the artisan, the handwork, the artisan. It works itself out of that which is necessary out of the presuppositions which Herr Strakosch has presented, namely, out of the yearning in such a space as he depicted to receive the arch. Now, towards one direction, this question of style was solved through that combination which was found in the Gothic aspect in the cross vaults, the pointed arch, and the cross beams. However, when we keep in mind the other thing which was emphasized, so the situation gets another illumination, I might say. It was also said that with the simple ineinander fügen, inserting one thing in another, which is given with the handwerk, the artisan, nevertheless, the Gothic would not be able to come out properly, because still all sort of other things live in the Gothic, of definite forms, of definite viewpoints, about which in the Lodge of Freemasons a certain mystery was preserved. A secret was strongly preserved, and that also goes beyond that of the artisan aspect. Thus we find there an element which is built in, which is to be sought in the style, which however, and which however for the modern age, is in its actual nature still very little lost in relationship to the working out. I don't know what that bloody means. I don't know what that bloody bubble means. Anyway, let's continue. Today you do no more that which is done out of the mysteries of architecture without the strong considerations which have to be inserted today and things like that which have arisen out of quite other presuppositions. Precisely these propositions can indeed, and I will in the first place present the ideas hypothetically, these presuppositions are connected with other things. They are able to be connected with the fact that today, not actually, there doesn't dominate today the productive style creating, but what dominates is the reproductive style. Perhaps there stream forth precisely those soul entities which have been very strongly preserved. There stream forth those forces which lie at the base of productivity. And perhaps there originates precisely the perplexity about the style in the modern age, because in the first place a certain element in building has been lost. And this element must indeed be quite specially taken care of and considered in architecture, because it there, in relationship to the strong laws which proceed out of space, you must hold yourself very pliant, very flexible. One has in the architecture, in the most comprehensive sense, to concern oneself with what makes it possible to depend upon the scientific established technique, technology. And one is on the other side placed in the necessity to bring a certain style element into what you build. What Stein is saying here, simply stated, is there is a new element which should enter into modern architecture. Modern architecture is so greatly influenced by the limitations imposed upon it by the technique, the technology, and it forgets a certain element. We're talking about the element of style. The question now arises, was not perhaps in the ancient times the technique much more narrower bound to the style than it is today? Perhaps was not that which was given as the regulations for building, so grasped that at the same time the technique contained went along with it. That one, as it were, was able to build insofar as one yielded oneself to that which was following certain preserved rules. Was it not, in spite of the fact, was it not possible, in spite of the fact that in the artistic, from the artistic point of view, had they had style, nevertheless, the technology was introduced into the style. Simply stated, in ancient times, they followed strict rules, but these strict rules enabled style to be maintained in spite of the technique. Today, they don't do that. I'm sure that's all he's saying here. Now, such a feeling you again receive when you so experience something as it must be experienced in Dornach. It yielded itself to me, and the important things always indeed come out of a certain naivety. It yielded itself to me, I got the idea, of course, he's saying that, to take the auditorium and enclose it by a cupola, and to this cupola to attach another cupola which should crown the stage. Now the question was to find this connection, to find the techniques to do this. And there formed itself for a long time an important question. I perceived the necessity to make it that way. On the other side, I had to find the technical way of doing it. I could only always say, until I found the solution, the following. What yields itself out of the necessity of style, that also must, if the correct technical solution could be found, that must also show a certain perfection in relationship to the technical solution. These things ultimately should coincide. Naturally, when something is conceived either intellectually or in an unartistic way, and one still wants to build a constructor without style, so there would not yield for it a technique. When, however, really in the undergrounds you can find something in the basis in which you must go towards style, then you must find the corresponding technique. However, the historical aspect doesn't help you at all if out of a naive meaning out of a spontaneous originality, you want to create a style. However, one can subsequently orientate oneself out of that which evolution has produced, development has produced. And there I would like, in order to complete the thing, to mention something which perhaps in the first place, in the present time, it may appear to be somewhat paradoxical, as so many things which is spoken here from anthroposophical spiritual science seems to be paradoxical, but which, however, probably in the course of the time will show itself to be thoroughly practical, even though today it may appear to so many people to be fantastic. Now, I'm not going to go back to the consideration of the Oriental architecture or the Egyptian architecture, which has been adequately considered. But I will in the first place point to that which lies in the underground, at the basis, as the results of the Oriental Egyptian architecture. I will point to the Greek. In other words, I'll point to something which proceeds out of the Oriental Egyptian architecture, namely to the Greek architecture. And again, in the first place, to the Greek temple structure. But I will now touch on the technical aspect, which is absolutely organically united with that, which I would like to characterize as style. I believe the person who intimately studies Greek architecture will find that the forms of it Actually, you can't come to terms with the forms of it if you focus yourself too much upon the static element which dominates in it. The Greek architecture absolutely takes into consideration, you can see it clearly, this static element. They are inside it. It is inside it, but the static element is inside it, but the static element is inside it in an extraordinary free way. It is all over in it, so that you say the following. It is, in a certain way, quite freely dominated with that which we call today static. There you have things that are carrying and things that press down. But one is again fallen, but one neither falls into the error of that which is presented to arise as pure decoration, which doesn't stand upon the earth, nor is one on the other side fallen to the one-sidedness, that you regard too much the situation of the pure static element. There is an element hidden in it, which perhaps is still more intimately hidden than the secrets of the later structures which proceeded out of instinctive perceptions of mankind, and which again can be found only through spiritual scientific research. In certain connection, indeed, these Greek temple buildings, in a certain connection, are functional buildings. A Greek temple, considered for itself as a pure structure, is actually never something complete. If you take the statues of the gods out of the Greek temple, and then you observe it, then you have the feeling that the most essential thing is missing, that you cannot understand the temple. You can only understand it as the dwelling place of the god, and only when you presuppose that actually the people are concerned with it from the outside of the temple, that actually only the god is permitted to be within the temple. Now there yields itself out of that fact that the temple is the dwelling place of the god, there yields itself actually not very much for those intuitions which have flown into the building of the temple. One must still go back to something else, precisely in reference to the goal of the building of the temple, when I perhaps in an exaggerated sense might say, in relationship to the question of requirements. There one can say the following. The pure external side of the determination is for that person who wants to relate himself to these things in a literary way, taken out of the fact that the temple is the dwelling place of the god. Not, however, for those who want to proceed beyond the literary description of it. A person who won't go beyond that, he'll never understand the inner formation of the temple. For that person, it's necessary for him to approach something else, namely, that you have to regard the temple as it appears as a Greek temple, as something which is formed around original burying vaults, burying structures. The Greek temple does not permit itself to be understood in any other way other than that you have to consider it as a metamorphosis of a cemetery vault, something built round where you bury people. Now, however, that leads you back into the times in which the soul of the dead person was looked for in the neighborhood of the buried corpse. The soul, which was supposed still to be there, would be erected. The forms of the structure were erected in consideration of the fact that the soul would be hanging around it. There you went from the development of the cult of ancestors to the cult of the gods. And the cult of the gods in the ancient religions is nothing other than a metamorphosed, transformed ancestor cult. The ancient gods, from Zeus right down to Hermes, and taken in the main, are ancestors. They are thought as ancestors. And as one looked at the domination or the sway of the soul spiritual in the gods, so also it was a transformation of that which one regarded as the swaying or the domination of the soul after death in the case of the dead person. There yielded itself in relationship to these forms of perception something which intimately hung together. Now it concerns itself to form something to surround the soul. And there you had to take forced relationships. You had to arrive at such a static, which as external static was possible, but at the same time served as the purpose of being an umbau, a structure to surround a soul so the soul would want to dwell in it. And also the soul of the gods must be able to form such a structure. Summarizing what we've said so far, Rudolf Steiner is saying if you go far back, you find the original structures were built for to house the soul of human beings after death, where they buried them. They buried the corpse and they built a structure around the corpse. But now, in the case of using the ancestors, which they build a structure around, now they build a structure to go around the dwelling place of a god. So the worship of the god replaced the worship of the ancestors. That's all he's saying here. Plato continues. From whence proceeded these relationships? That's the great question. On such a way considered, as we in our age correctly learns, in other words, the way we do it today wasn't done then. This was not understood in those ancient times. The small amount of literature which is still present also clearly shows that one did not build any such structure out of a strong static and mathematic and mechanics. But those ancient times had something else. And there I arrive at something which naturally might be regarded as fantastic, and today can be regarded that way, even though it's worked out in a practical way. Namely the following. It concerns itself to investigate out of what means, so we say, for example, was discovered the point, the center of gravity, which simply had to be brought. You had to use that because you had to know when you built a building where is the center of gravity. But you couldn't find it with the intellect, but you found it with feeling. The feeling for style, out of that you had a feeling for style, and that feeling for style enabled you to distribute the forces and how you can arrange the materiality. And that you got out of a pure feeling which lived within the soul. At that time, in those ancient times, you didn't have those abstract ideas of the soul which you find in the present psychology. These abstract conceptions of the soul, the ancient peers didn't have. They had quite definite views of the soul. It would be interesting to present these conceptions of the soul, but I haven't enough time to do it. It's much more interesting than to give the perceptions which these ancient people had about the soul in a certain degree that contained what the descriptions of the ancient soul ideas, which are not contained in the philosophy of Wundt, and you can't find in these ancient ideas what Wundt describes of the ancient soul ideas, done materialistically. At that time, concrete concepts in relationship to the form. All this bloody thing does to say, a simple bloody sentence, he could say, look, these ancient peoples had a certain concept of soul. And because they had a definite concept of the soul, not the sort of thing that Wundt and other philosophers say, not that, no. They had a definite concept of soul, and out of this concept of soul, they were able to get the material aspects. Simply like that. Now Rufsan continues. Now how did people do it? So strange it might appear to today, when today you build everything on what you discover and static relationships. There we invent things today. What did the ancient people do? They took the human organization and it's static. I got it now. Now he's started moving to the point. He's coming to this final point. And indeed, what in the ancient Greek time for the stylization of architecture came into consideration, that came out of the static of the human limb organization. Now we've got the point. Now we've got the bloody point here. Now, it also continues. When I say that, when I talk about the style coming out of the human limb organization, I'm not meaning something's just a putting together of the arms and the legs, but to that also belongs the lower jawbone. And very much in the middle of the human being, the breast man. But all that which lies as the limb human being, that could be studied. One could test how a certain force connection works when, for example, with a bent knees, half sitting down, you crouch. From that perception, you got the relationship of the point of gravity to a certain craft force system when one attempted to put the mouth in the best way to get the best for the ideal center of gravity of the head. And as you know, it doesn't exist in the Kinlander, jawbone. It's interesting, in a Greek sculpture, to study the remarkable form of the open mouth. There arose out of a certain study of the posture or the gesture of the jawbone, which one experienced inwardly in its static and dynamic. Precisely as one experiences for the static dynamic relationships, when you, for example, crouch down and rest your arms upon your knee. You study the human being, and particularly in the ancient times, they studied the dynamics of the limb man. Out of the way which the dynamics expressed itself in the human being, because the human being, as you know, also can walk, in spite of the fact that in order for a human being to walk, he had to develop a quite special inward static dynamic relationship. Out of all that, one formed conceptions about quite definite, static, dynamic relationships, and particularly about static relationships. Ah, now we come to the important point, and there which could be studied at the human organism itself, there we find again in the forming of the temple structures. One said to oneself, what man has as head in himself is truly a beautiful external expression for the physical human being, but it's just an expression for the physical human being. Man is indeed head man precisely in order to become very, very, very useful for the physical world. Even so, one thought in a certain way about the trunk, the breast, the trunk man, and the breathing man. One said to oneself, that is something, meaning the breathing and the breather, the trunk man and the breathing man, that is something which lies at the base of the human connection here with the earthly environment. Head and the portions of the breast, the parts of the breast, they fell away when one, for example, in ancient times, conceived the housing for the soul. One thought, particularly in that which is not directly ensouled in the human form, one thought of the forced relationships which yield themselves in the manipulation of the limb man. This limb man, that was the vehicle through which the human being carried his soul here into the earth. The force system which man there unfolded, that entered into the soul. That's what they studied, and they wanted to surround that when they built something for the soul after death. What one there could experience, insofar as one in a living way carried one's soul through existence, that was inserted into that which the soul wanted as a thing to umschließen, to surround the soul. But not in an abstract way, but with all concreteness and practical reality of the ancient conception. Simply stated, when these ancient people built a structure for to surround the corpse of the man, says to, because they felt the soul was near the corpse, they didn't go to the head, they didn't go to the breast man, they went to the forced relationships of the limb man. That's all. Okay. Rav Sadik continues, such things are always externally so to be studied that one perceives, one looks on certain qualities of feeling, perception. One can that, and spiritual science gives it with complete security, firmness, what I've just said, but one can also receive a certain conception of such things from the external symptoms. Just think upon what the Greek sculptor specially wanted to point when he wanted to present the human being as a physical form. The legs were high, and for later relationships, an extraordinarily big head. Actually, the length of the head was contained 8 times in Greek sculpture, 8 times in the total length of the human being. He, particularly the sculptor, looked particularly on the head, insofar as the head had a certain length, thus a limb organism. He particularly studied the limb organism of the head, and again studied on the whole human being the limb organism. Everything which is contained in a system of the human being is indeed also contained in something else. Oh, I see what he's saying. The whole man is again contained in the head. Okay, I've got it now. I've got it. Okay. You look at the head and you see the limb in the head. How do you see the limb in the head? You have the arm and the arm and leg constructions in the jaws. Only you must consider the head reversed. So you're able to say in the Greek, the main attention was directed in the human being on the limbs. Even to the point of view when they looked at the head, they looked at the head insofar as it was a depiction of the limb. Now the limb system for the sculptor is weakest expressed in the breast and trunk man. And so that recedes very much in Greek sculpture. And so in the Greek sculpture, the middle portion, the limb, the trunk and the breast portion is the shortest and weakest part. Long lower limbs and a big head in relationship to the rest, that is a direction of the attention upon that which follows in the human being, an inner static. And this inner static was carefully studied and preserved. To be an architect means to possess such knowledge which can study in the most noblest way in the human being. So far Rudolf Steiner told us that the Greek architecture was based upon a study of the human being. And he brought the, and then he talked about the sculpture and how in this case the Greek sculpturing was mainly focused on the limb relationships. The limb, the extremities in a sense, the extremities were emphasized, and also the head was made larger because they looked upon the extremities in the head, and the middle portion was much weaker. Okay. Having finished that, Rudolf Steiner continues, now we arrive at the Middle Ages. Herr Strakosch indicated in a very excellent way how there something different lives in the arch, vaulted arch, in the pointed arch. Something else flows into the vaulted arch and the pointed arch. There, something new lives in that. What lives in that you're able to study when you again focus your attention on how in the Middle Ages man was perceived. If you observe the Middle Age presentation of man in the Middle Ages, you do not have eight times the head contained in the whole human form, but approximately 10 times. The people have a small head, which means that the limb organism of the head recedes, and also little attention is paid upon the rest of the limbs, but on the contrary, you have a very long trunk. That is the main situation in Middle Age sculpture. In the Middle Ages, they focused upon the mid portion of man. If you study this static, and because of the shortness of time, I must express myself in a paradigmatic way, you find the focusing upon the rhythmical human portion. That would express itself in the rhythmical portion, in the statics of the rhythmical portion. And so one can find in that which produces the pure handwork, the artisan work associated with Gothics, the Gothic. And again, and belonging to this, you have a trust in God. Herr Strakosch led his significance back. Then he says, here, in the Middle Ages, it came out of the middleman, out of the heart, not out of the head. In that same period in which confronting the study of the external nature and the study of the pure mathematics and mechanics which are to be applied to nature, the direction of the attention on the human being disappears. And so you lose those elements which can lead to a style. That period of time when people scientifically, mathematics and mechanics, people lost the human being, and so they lost style. You only come to a style when you study man as a microcosmos and how you can configure that in the external present time. And when now you're placed before the task of building a new architecture style, so it concerns itself to create again out of similar underground, similar basis. It concerns itself again to return to that which comes out of the human being. Now in our age of natural scientific development, it can't be found, as I've attempted to describe it for the two epochs of human beings, but only in so far as one goes. You know, the ancient Greeks focused upon the limb man, the Middle Ages upon the rhythmical man. Now in our age we rise up to the head man. But with that you can't do very much, because the head man to the highest degree has already configured its relationships. The head man is indeed that in which the individual element of the human being expresses itself to the highest degree in the forms. And so there you cannot begin at all in the same way as the Greek statics, where one, as it were, had in the connection of space, there you put in the connection of space what you couldn't see in the human being when he stood in front of you. Likewise in a later time, one had placed in a space experience that which you couldn't see. I think I'm getting what they're striving at now. First, the ancient Greeks, they looked at the limb man. In the outside sculpture and architecture, they placed what belongs to the limb man, but they couldn't see in the limb man. The Middle Ages, they applied the same thing to the middle man. Our age, head man, but the head man's got everything in it. So what do? To find the real, to coincide with our present age, what do? You go to the actual spirituality of the human being. Hence, in the Dornach building, something was produced which was not merely an auditorium, but which is also a space in which the single human being can so feel himself that at the same time he arrives at self-knowledge. The Greek building was an umrahmung, something surrounding the soul. The Gothic building is something which, as I've told you, is a place where people can gather. It's not finished unless the community is inside it. Now we have to have a building which so yields the human being so that one no longer can have him in the external human form, but in imaginations. You have the form in inner perception. If you try to build today in the same way in which they built previously, you would fall down into intellectual building. It would be no longer art. Whereas the static of the Greeks was a pure perception, today our static has to be something we work out, a workout of the head. And we must find precisely that which was hidden, which was drawn away from the Greeks. That which he had perceived as a static, he actually built up what he built, what he saw. But for us, the static has to come out of the intellect. And so we've had the Dornach bow, which is certainly not symbolic. It's a lie when you say that the bow is symbolic, because that would be inartistic. Everything in this building has to be perceived in an artistic way. Hence, the person who comes to Dornach will feel quite home in this space, because the space is constructed, the style enables the human being to find himself. In the Dornach Bau, nothing's fantastic, but everything is a concrete, characterized, built out of a style conscience. Remember, it wasn't my idea to build the Dornach building. The idea of having a building for anthroposophy came from other people. My task was to find the style for the building. This was a task given to me by anthroposophists. The building didn't spring from me as a fact out of my idea. We can't do what people do today and try to make reminiscence of the ancient architectural style. We have to build our own style coming out of the demands of our own age. With anthroposophy, we're dealing with something completely new. We're not dealing with theories, we're dealing with life. Hence, at the same time, that which has to be art can't be pure intellectualism, because intellectualism dims the feeling. Artists often get anxiety from anthroposophy because they consider anthroposophy a theory like some other theory. But through theories, the artistic aspect is abgestumpft, is dumbed down, but not through anthroposophy. In anthroposophy, the feeling and the will impulses are precisely stimulated. Anthroposophy stimulates the whole human being. Anthroposophy can make the human being much more skillful right into his hands. This ought to be mentioned, but today people are so unskillful that they can't even sew a button on their trousers. We have to see into the fact that when you go into anthroposophic ideas, you get a mobility which penetrates in, makes you more skillful and more dexterous. It's not just thoughts, but anthroposophy gives you world forces in which human being lives. Hence, when you build something, when you sculpture something, when you paint something, you do it in such a way that this comes out of the complete human being itself. Hence, because anthroposophy is something new in our present culture, you had to have a building surrounding it which could just be adapted for anthroposophy. Hence, out of the spiritual impulses themselves, the style for this building had to be found. The Dornach building stands there in such a way that that which is spoken from the podium, that should, in order to proclaim the content of the spiritual world, has to have a special kind of surrounding. Every pillar, every capital speaks in its way the words which can be spoken from the podium. There is a harmony present. Just as in the Greek soul there was a harmony between the perception of God and the building of the temple, one has to create out of the impulses of the arising of the art. Then there arrives something which you can't have discussions about. You can't discuss the style. The style is something which must be grasped by the whole human being. Out of that, out of which are more than thoughts, but which are experienced as forces. Forces which press and pulse right into the blood of the human being, so that you're able to configure it externally. Only with just a few notices, I want you to point to the fact how today you have to discover a style to suit our age. Now, what we've done in Dornach is probably very imperfect. I myself am the strongest critic of this building. It's just the first beginning. But we've attempted to find the ductus of the style, to find something which sits in the style. And because, while something here has been inserted in the style, because into the style there has been inserted real spirituality, one can also, that material, that concrete, which is so unyielding, so inflexible, you can dominate this concrete, so that one can say to yourself the following: certainly, out of concrete, you can't make very much unless when you don't make the most fearful nonsense. But the most fearful nonsense is precisely that without style. One first can make something out of concrete if, in the rest of the presuppositions, it could be utility buildings, it could be such a building as a high school for spiritual science, but you have to have spiritual presuppositions which are so living that one can say that also in concrete doesn't permit yourself to make anything that you like, but you can only use one thing at a place. You only put it in a certain place. So he started his lecture by saying many people can't do very much or do or think what they like with concrete, but here when we deal with concrete, we have to put it in a certain place. For example, you know very well in the human being where he has a earlobe, you can't put the big toe. Nature won't permit that. When you have a certain massive force of the organism, can only be placed at one particular place if you live in perception. And that's what we're dealing with, a feeling for style and of the plastic concrete material. Perhaps in Dornach you're able to experience it in spite of the facts it is true that out of certain perceptions Herr Strakosch has said about the concrete material. The concrete material in Dornach, we attempted to handle it, even though I didn't succeed, that at a certain place, that which sits in a certain place is necessary to have there. And one says, out of perception, just as a certain place of the head, there could be only an earlobe could be placed in a certain place in the head, so here in the concrete, you can only have here a certain form. But that must proceed out of the leading over of the purely symmetrical, of the purely measured metric, into the organic, the inward experienced measurement, the inwardly experienced symmetrical, as one has it when one passes over from a pure mechanism to an organism. Once the step had to be made, to again come to a style, to go from a geometrical, symmetrical, metrical style to an organic style. This must appear so imperfect, but I try to start something in this direction. And as far as a utility building, as you'll find in the Goethe Arnhem, you get it when you go in the ways that we've done. And the ways we've done enables you to be productive and not reproductive. What we try to do is to fulfill the desire for a new style to arise. Here's the end of the lecture. Thank God for that. I got something out of it, out of all this struggling. End of tape.